soccer matters.
Quick shot, score! The US with Dempsey!
To Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro, remate de gol! Gol de oro! Gol de oro! Gol de Uribe!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Big thank you to Jan Christensen, Danish Inspirations. You get over to 2775 Fondren for the best in modern contemporary furniture. Now, Danish Inspirations, it should be on your bucket list of modern contemporary furniture shopping. DanishInspirations.com to see the wide selection, the stressless line. I've got modern contemporary furniture from Danish Inspirations all over my house. Danish Inspirations, modern contemporary furniture, longtime sponsors of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. And, of course, our presenting sponsor, the one and only John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. And John and I were able to take in the Manchester City Club America game. He was able to meet a lot of people in the soccer community and get to know, and the soccer community got to know John and his support of soccer on the radio for many, many years. So if you get in any kind of a car, boat, motorcycle, maritime accident, injury, that's when you call the Daspit Law Firm, 713-322-HURT, 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. It's DaspitLaw.com. Part two, Pat Onstad right now. Speaking of the next opponent, Philadelphia Union, you know, when I look at their roster and I look at the young guys on that team, these are not novelty guys. These are not gimmickry. These are guys that at 18 and 19, they comfortably and confidently put in their lineup. Guys like Aronson, there's a number of them down there. I'm trying to think of the kid, McGlynn. These guys go in at 18 and 19, and they look like they belong. When do you think we reach that peak now? Is it with these Dynamo 2 guys? Is it a couple years
some
down
of them
the
possibly,
road?
Like, the example I use is the Brooklyn Reigns, who isn't necessarily our homegrown product, guy we actually just picked up. But, we have some guys in our group that we think can make that jump. But what I would say is and it took Philadelphia some time. Let's remember Jim Curtin's first few years in the league. I think there was always questions whether, he was going to be able to hang in there. But what he did is he's developed a game model that he believed in that reflects who he is as a person and developed that. And that took time. That wasn't like something where he just developed, walked in, said, here's my game model. And within 3 months, that's what they were playing like. And I think that's where we're at as a club as well. Like Paulo and I have a game model that we would like to see implemented. I don't think we necessarily have the exact players that fit that system that we want to do, but it's something we're trying to get to, evolve to, not just with the players too, but with the coaches. And the coaches are trying to work on that and get their game model ironed out. And I think once you have that game model, and this goes back to your question, I will eventually answer your question, is that you've got these guys, these kids that now have grown up in the academy, seeing the system, whether they play it as strictly in the academy as they do in the first team. I do know they mimic it. I don't think it's, completely black and white in terms of it's either this way or not, but they do mimic what they get there. And so when they make the jump, they fit into where they're maybe two of them are playing at a time, but you have nine guys in the field that understand exactly what's going on. And all they have to do is do their role. So I think we need to, as a club, we need to get there where we have a distinct style of play and an identity where fans go, okay, that's the Dynamo. I just saw the Dynamo play. And I don't think we're there yet. Paul and I talked about this even just yesterday. It's something we're still working on. It's still evolving, but we've got to get there. And the sooner we can get there, then I think the easier it'll be to bring in these kids, these young guys, because they'll be able to see it and they'll understand it and their roles will be easily defined.
Yeah. And I mean, the more we look at teams like I watched the Red Bull in Austin this past weekend and to see these young guys and to know that they don't count a lot against the salary cap in their first couple of years with the club. I mean, this is like gold. It's like gold having these guys.
I agree 100%. And Red Bull is a great example. I mean, they're interesting. They scored four goals. They had they won 4-3. They had 80 passes completed in the game. I mean, usually we had 621 against Minnesota. So, I mean, possession, everyone talks about possession. That shows you, possession isn't everything. Yeah, I think Minnesota had 120 completed passes and beat us 2-1. But what I would say is As much as I admire,
but you knew that going into the game, you knew what they were doing. They didn't even want the ball.
Transition team, yeah. and
the Red Bulls didn't either.
No,
let's be honest.
Yeah, and unfortunately for us, our transition defense was not great on Sunday, and I'm sure Austin would say, well, we're a build up team, and we're a team that wants to make the field as big as possible, and they would say, you know what, we tried to play through them, and we made some major errors that cost them goals and cost
them
the game.
They were really uncomfortable the first 40 minutes until Driussi scores. I mean, who's a remarkable player. Now, so I just brought up Driussi's name too. And by the way, Philadelphia, the same thing. I know you guys all know this, but for everybody listening in, it's another team that if you go look at their data, there's nothing there that quantifies them to be an undefeated team at home except efficiency, collectiveness, and a lot of great attributes that they have. But the data doesn't always quantify things. And it's another one of those teams. And the Dynamo have really struggled to get the game's first goal against these types of teams. Like Minnesota, I'm going into that game. Me and Eddie are talking on the pregame show, and we're going, look, you got to get the first goal here to take the pressure off. It's tough when you don't. And then, of course, you're playing from behind 7 out of the last 9 games. That's tough.
No, it is. It is. I mean, we definitely need to start a lot better than we have. That's been frustrating. And I know, you know, the coaching staff are frustrated as well. And so are the players. And again, I'll go always back to the effort piece. And I think, you know, that I think we've got right this year for the most part, not necessarily every game. And I'm sure individually, not for every single player all the time. But what I would say is I think we've got that piece right. But the end is, the end game of this is to win games. You know, you've got to score goals and you've got to beat opponents. And when you're at home, for me, if we don't make the playoffs this year, it's not because of our road record. It's not because of lack of effort. Could be a bit of identity in the way we play. Yeah, possibly. But I think for me, more than anything, is the way we play at home. Like we got 4-4-4 at home. That's just not good enough. That's not a playoff team in this league. It's a difficult to play on the road in this league, and we've done a reasonable job with 3 wins. Not fantastic, but a reasonable job. Our home record is what's going to cost us if we don't make the playoffs.
Yeah, 20 points left on the table, and I'm thinking of games in my mind right now that I know you guys were the better team, and you didn't take the points. Portland jumps out right away. He's Pat Onstad, general manager of the Houston Dynamo. Tiago, were you hoping for more from him? Were you hoping for him to make a first-team impact?
Yeah, or was he going to be – I think I'll go right into it. Sorry, cutting you off because I think that's a great question. I think, we were talking about that. Asher Mendelson and I, the technical director, were talking about this today. And that's a mistake. There's no doubt about it. In terms of our recruitment process, the way we went through it, we rushed through it a little bit too fast. We didn't get eyes on him live. There's a player we signed through film, then some great recommendations from people. But we didn't provide, I would also say we didn't provide a good environment for him to develop. We didn't give him the opportunity to develop. And, ultimately I think we failed in the whole process. I don't blame Tiago. Tiago's done everything he can to try to play at this level, but it's too big a step for him at this point. And I think part of it too is sometimes when you bring, especially young kids, you know, and so assuming the signing goes well in the next 24 hours, you have to make sure you provide an environment. So we've already discussed that. Like one of the issues we did is, we need to make sure these kids have support. So we're going to bunk them in with another player. So on the first team, so that right away they have support, a Spanish speaker, so that helps. There are things that we need to do better as a club. The player care coordinator, trying to get people settled into market. We need to do a better job as a club. So there's lots of things where we failed Tiago. And to a certain extent, the saving grace I think we have in that whole piece is that we also knew we were taking a risk and we brought him in on loan. So we're not tied. It's not a 3-4 year deal where we're tied to him. But unfortunately for him, I unlikely he'll be back next year. And I think he understands that. So now how do we help him to at least progress for the rest of the year without, taking away opportunities for other guys that we feel that will be part of our group moving forward?
Now, you have to feel pretty positive, though. You got an under-23 team, which has never been, a Dynamo 2 team, which has never been here. Yeah. I always made the comment that, look, I don't know how you can be serious about player development until you got a reserve team in-house. Everybody has their eyes on it. It's all contained. This is exciting. This is good stuff. I see Mateo Pineda, Brooklyn Reigns, Juan Castilla all got called into an under-19 camp. That's positive. Tell us a little bit about Pineda.
To be honest, he hasn't really pumped up with the second team. So I haven't seen a lot of him. I've seen him a couple of games with the 17s, with our 17s group. So most of my feedback here will be through Tony Vigil, who's kind of our, We call him a high performance director, but it's not high performance in terms of physical. He's more our pathway coach and takes time. But he's an interesting prospect. You know, I think for him, he still has some steps to go till he's at the second team level. I think Juan and Brooklyn, for example, are guys that are more advanced and closer to the first team than Mateo is. But Mateo this year alone has really in the last 6 months has developed phenomenally, like to the point now where we're saying, okay, listen, this is a guy now we need to get in the second team, get some reps, get some looks at him and see how he goes. So everyone develops at a different rate and different ways. And the nice thing is, as you mentioned, the 23s team gives us a pathway now to make that jump. They don't have to make the jump from the 17s to the professional team. Is such a big jump, and it gives guys games. And you know, one with Juan Castillo is a great example of last year. He really lost a year of development. We weren't able to get him games. He's up here training with the first team, and he probably should have been out playing games with RGV, or preferably if we had the Houston Dynamo two team right here in market. So a kid like him who's lost a year of development, it's good to see him get back here and now start. And you could see actually in the first half the other day, I thought he had a good first half. Second half struggled a little bit, but the first half, he's now getting a little more confident, starting to play forward. And to me, that's just the fact that he's got games under his belt.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because I noticed he was always playing everything lateral and safe. And yeah. I know you guys want him to play more progressive line-breaking passes. Yeah. Okay, two quick questions, and we're going to end it here. Real quick, just the rest of the season, how do we look at it? You got to take like 25 points out of 36. That's a tall order in Major League Soccer for anybody. Yeah. How do you look at the rest of the season? Does there become a development side of it in your mind? How do you look at it?
I don't think you, in our league, you never say it's development side until you're mathematically eliminated. Then I think at that stage, you reevaluate, you sit down, you have meetings, and you go through what you want to do and what your plan is moving forward. But at this point now, it's about trying to figure out how do we get 3 points in Philadelphia. As you mentioned earlier, probably the hardest place in the league to play right now, and one of the top teams in the league. But for us, we're going to go in and try to get 3 points. And the nice thing is, if you beat a team like Philadelphia, we are a strange group. But that will give our group a massive, massive boost. And for us, it's about trying to get some momentum here. You're right about it's a difficult task. You know, can we get 24, 25 points in the last, 36 points? It's going to be very difficult. But I think for us, you know, we've got to believe until we are told we can't. So we're going to keep trying to push forward. And for me, it would be nice to see us get some momentum and get on a bit of a string of wins. Even if we don't end up making the playoffs, which, you know, it's going to break my heart. And I think a lot of guys in the locker room is going to be devastating for. But I think we haven't really had a good run outside of the very beginning of the season. And it'd be nice for us if we could string together a 4, 5, 6 game undefeated streak, even if it's, you know, 3 wins and 3 draws, just for us to get some confidence and realize, like, these are the moments. That's the way you get into the playoffs in our league is you have a 3-game, you play 3 in 8 days and you pick up 7, 9 points. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you race up the ladder. And those are the moments we haven't achieved so far this year. And hopefully we can here in the last 12 games.
Dynamo GM Pat Onstad. And by the way, that is an opportunity to be the first team to walk into Philadelphia and get a win. There's some incentive right there. Yep. Last one, Hector Herrera, any feedback from him? You know, it's been a hectic two weeks for him, or however long he's been here. I mean, he's really done it on and off the field. What about some feedback from him?
Yeah, he's been fantastic. I think he's been probably more than we expected. You know, his leadership in the locker room has been excellent. You know, he wants to win. So that part, I think, for him has been very difficult. You know, I think we're 1-2-1 with him in the lineup. And he's been a little frustrated, I think, at times. But at the same token, you still see him on the field coaching and helping guys along and telling them where to be. I know for a fact he's really happy with the three guys in midfield. I know with Coco beside him and Mateo Maddie protecting him. I think we've got a good three. That's a pretty darn good three. And I challenge you to find a better three in the league. There's not a lot. So I think that part's been great. But, you know, around them, we've got to get better and we've got to produce on the field. I mean, ultimately, again, it comes down to wins. Our goal is still to make the playoffs, but it's going to be a difficult trek here moving forward.
Pat, as always, thank you very much. Thanks for the candid nature of the conversation, the transparency. And I am sure the fan base appreciates it immensely. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Glenn. Thanks for having me on.
Big thank you to Pat Onstad for coming on tonight, the Dynamo general manager there. Very transparent interview. Hope you enjoyed that one. Before we head to break here, I just want to remind you again about our presenting sponsor, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. They're going to work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. Get in an accident, Nothing worse than something happening injury-wise to you or a family member. That's when you call the Daspit Law Firm, 713-322-HURT, 713-322-HURT. They are bilingual. DaspitLaw.com on your side, DaspitLaw.com. By the way, also hit me up on Twitter and Instagram at Glenn Davis Sock, at Soccer Matters GD. And let's keep this thing rolling. Let's keep pumping up our sport. We got World Cup 2026 here. We got Hector Herrera here for the Houston Dynamo. A lot for us to be excited about in the Houston soccer community.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Football Hall of Famer Eddie George, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Daddy, thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure. How's things you do, Glenn? Everything okay?
Everything good, and I would say Higginbotham's a pretty traditional English name, isn't it?
It is, but the bizarre thing is, I've actually been told that it's quite a popular name in America as well. So yeah. I don't know where that comes from, but it seems to be quite popular as well. So yeah, it's definitely a traditional English name, that's for sure.
It's a good one. No, I had a youth player whose last name was Higginbotham. So that's when I saw your name, it jumped out. All right, so let me just take you into your playing career and maybe just the way you're brought up in England, obviously, within academies of teams and everything, and then maybe related a little to MLS, because obviously we know that the Philadelphia Union are doing real good work with young players.
Yeah, they are. They're doing a great job with the younger players, and it was a real eye-opener for me when I first moved over, you know, just how much they went about it, you know, the way they promote the youth. And, you know, it's brilliant to see, because that creates an identity for a club. And I think it's an identity that, you know, a lot of clubs are envious of in a really good way as well, because, you know, it's a great way for the club to be run.
And I'm looking at it from the perspective of even the Houston Dynamo, who are late to the game on the academy side. And when I look at Jack McGlynn, I look at the Aronson brothers, Sullivan, the names we go through with the Union, not only are these kids potentially being sold on like the elder Aronson, but I mean, they're filling roles at 19 that are very important for this team to get results too. I mean, it's an incredible area that has been cultivated by the Union.
Yeah, and it's not just a gimmick. You know, there's been a number of games that I've covered, really big games, and, you know, some of the younger players that you've just mentioned have either come on at key moments, have started key games, and I think there's a huge element of trust from all the coaching staff, from the senior players, and you can see one of the biggest things is when the younger players come onto the pitch, it's not a case of, oh, you know what, I just want to get this first touch and make it okay. They actually want to make a difference. And, you know, Jack McGlynn, obviously he's played in recent games, such an intelligent player, you know, experienced beyond his years. And he just sees the game in a way that a teenager shouldn't. And that is full credit to the club. So how you see it is obviously there's an evolvement as in terms for the younger players, how they progress through the system. And then when they come and train with the first team, when they come and play with the first team, they just slot right in, because the way that they've been coached at the younger age groups, the philosophy of the club, the way the senior players get it, none more so than Bedoya, the captain, you know, his importance on and off the pitch you can't really put it into words at times. And so because these younger players have the environment that enables them to thrive. And I think one of the key things is as well, we always see, you know, it's great to see younger players coming through at clubs, but I think there's also a duty of care from the club, which is if and when these players move on, the club has to be right for the player. It's not all about Philadelphia Union saying, right, you know what, you can just go to this club because it's going to give us X amount of money. It's all about the growth of the player. And that's one of the biggest things that I've noticed as well, is that when a club takes care of the younger players and they don't just see them as a dollar sign, a pound sign, whatever you want to call it, depending on what country you're in, that for me is really important, because they have such a care for their next move, even though it wouldn't be Philadelphia Union, it would be another club that they're going to. It's so important that the young players that leave the club are put into a position where they can then go on to the next level, which I think is massive, and I think it's great.
And you used a really important word there, gimmick, because
we do know in this league in the past, players have been propped up to the first team that weren't ready, but was more of a marketing move around the league. And look, I understand you got to use your youth program as a vehicle of promotion, but you know, when I hear you say that there's a lot of care and concern going on here, the common thread, it's interesting because it's a team that if you look at all the data and you watch the games, you realize it's not really a possession oriented team. The data is not going to support being undefeated at home, which that's why sometimes data doesn't really tell us the truth. But it's an efficient team. It's a collective team. Are the younger teams being coached with the same purpose of play as the first team under Jim Curtin?
Yeah, and I think that's really important. So there's a couple of things. So my son came over last year, and you know, Philadelphia Union 2 were really good, and they allowed him to train with them. And that's where you can see there is a collective all the way through. Now, I think that that's really important, because then when a younger player then goes through to the first team, it's like, okay, they've not got to get used to a new system. They've not got to get used to a new style of play, a pressing system. But then you flip that. You flip that the other way around. And I remember speaking to the director of football at Norwich City a few years ago, a gentleman called Stuart Webber. And, you know, he'd had success bringing the younger players through. And I asked him a similar question. And I found it really interesting because it gave me another aspect on it as well. And I said to him, I said, do you play the same way that the first team plays? So at the time, the first team were playing a 4-2-3-1 with one centre forward. And he said, no, he said, up until the age of 20, 21, we play 4-4-2. And I was like, well, why do you do that then if you're hoping that the younger players can then develop and get through to the first team? He said, from a young age, we play 4-4-2 because the most expensive player in football is a centre forward. So if we can play at a younger age group with 4-4-2, that means it gives us double the chance of producing a centre forward rather than with just playing one up front. And it was a really different alternative, but I understood that as well.
Yeah.
But from a young player's perspective, what you want to have is that when you're making that transition from whether it be the youth team, the reserve team, the second team, whatever you may call it, you want to have that transition as smooth as possible. So if you're playing a diamond throughout the youth and then you go and play the diamond in the first team, you automatically, to a certain extent, know the position that you're then going to be playing in or thereabouts. So I think that's really important. And not the system, yes, but I think the style of play as well, because we all know that you put the systems out there, but within systems, there'll be a lot of teams that will play 4-4-2 or 4-2-3-1 or with three at the back, but they will play in different ways. You know, whether it be a high press, whether it be pressing lower, whether it be possession based, whether it be counter-attacking. So I think that's as important as a system that you're then going to go and play in. So it's really beneficial for the younger players.
He's Danny Higginbotham. He works with my great friend, JP Della Camera, on Philadelphia Union broadcast, former player in the Premier League and in the Championship. All right, through your eyes, and look, you're pretty fresh off your playing career. I mean, you're not an old guy, but
not yet.
Evolutionary wise, yeah. Well, you'll get there. Trust me, it's a long good ride, I think. But the evolution of the game now, even in the last 5 years or since you've retired, what have you seen?
I think it's. One of the things I think we're seeing now, and I don't necessarily agree with it, is that, you know, people say there's teams have to play football that's pleasing on the eye. When from my side of things, it's about winning. Okay, through the youth systems and things like that, it does get to a point, whatever age that may be, where it does become about winning. Yes, you want to have the performance, but you also want to get the points. So when we look at football at the moment, you know, you've got teams like Manchester City, you've got the old Barcelona team. They would play the way that's supposedly, you know, the right way to play, which I don't agree with at all. Now, for you to play the football that's so-called pleasing on the eye whilst also having the success, that's very few and far between. A lot of the times you'll see teams that play lovely football but go nowhere with it. And then other times you will see teams that play football that isn't necessarily pleasing on the eye, but it gets them the results. So I think that's one of the things that I've seen. It's sort of a period or an era of snobbery in football where it's like you have to play this way, where I don't agree with that. I think athleticism, I think that's going on a consistent basis, is getting higher and higher and higher. And I do think more than ever now that probably systems are having an effect on how games are won and lost, because during my playing career, the only thing I concentrated on was my immediate opposition, obviously the opposition that you're playing against and the team that you're playing for. Whereas now I've had to broaden all of my horizons to know this style of play of this team, this style of play of that team, this individual player, that individual player. So it's been really good for me to get probably a better understanding that I never had as a player. I think if I had all the information and the reading of the game, which I like to feel I've got a decent reading of the game. Now, if I had that all as a player, it probably would have been information overload and data overload, and it would have been really confusing. So it's been great for me to see that. But as in terms of the game progressing, I think we're still in a period of counter-attacking football where a lot of teams do want to play on the counter-attack, but the first goal then becomes more important than ever. Because if you get that first goal, whether you're the home team or the away team, you've then earned the right to play the way that you want to play. If you want to play counter-attacking football as the home team, you've got to get that first goal and you've got to get it pretty early, or so opposition teams will sit back. And I think in particular in MLS, you know, away wins are hard to come by with everything that's entailed with it, the travel, the time difference, the weather. So I think a lot of the time what I've seen in MLS is that it's brilliant, it's entertaining, it's fascinating, but the onus is probably more so on the home teams because it's so difficult to get points away from home. So therefore, unless obviously you're New York Red Bulls at the moment. So therefore, the home form becomes so important, and it's really key that they get a fast start at home and get that opening goal.
All right. So that's part one with Danny Higginbotham, the color analyst for the Philadelphia Union, as we get you set for the Dynamo and Union this weekend. The Dynamo Union game will be on AT&T Sportsnet. Join Eddie Robinson and me for the call of that game. A couple of quick things here. At Advantage BMW in Midtown, by the way, I got in another X5 now. You go down to Advantage BMW in Midtown, you're going to experience premier service. They tailor it for you. They demand excellence. And at Advantage BMW Midtown, it just isn't offered. It's expected. The service center dedicated to putting your time first. Get in with the expert sales team. My guy's Justin. They can help you find the perfect new certified pre-owned or pre-owned vehicle. Discover something special. Discover your hometown Advantage at San Jacinto and Gray or at AdvantageBMWHouston.com. Remember, it's Advantage BMW Midtown. We'll come back with our final segment. It's part two with Danny Higginbotham, color analyst, Philadelphia Union.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters, final segment of the night here tonight. I want to remind you about Lamont Brands. Now, look, LamontBrands.com. Get your Soccer Matters t-shirt there. All the proceeds go to the Snowdrop Foundation, a 501c charity. I'm getting great pictures from around the country. Some of my high school friends, my former soccer teammates, sending pictures from the New Jersey shore. You get to LamontBrands.com. Go to LamontBrands.com. Right away, you'll see a thing for Soccer Matters t-shirt. Really inexpensive, great quality cotton. You're going to feel good in it. You're going to wear your game proudly. And you know what else? It's a t-shirt with a purpose, because all the proceeds, and I say all the proceeds, go to the 501c charity, the Snowdrop Foundation. So a big thank you to Lamont Brands. And also get over to 2775 Fondren for the best in modern contemporary furniture. Danish Inspirations has got to be on your bucket list of modern contemporary furniture shopping. You get over to DanishInspirations.com. You can see the wide open selection, the stressless line. It is the best in modern contemporary furniture, presented by the great Dane himself, Jan Christensen, and DanishInspirations.com. Get over there. Modern contemporary furniture does not get any better. It's Danish Inspirations, modern contemporary furniture. And don't forget the weekly Danish Dynamite segment. All right, final segment of the night here. We come back. We speak to Danny Higginbotham. This is part two. It's a really interesting team, the Philadelphia Union. Efficient as hell, collective in nature, obviously understand their system very well. Through your lens, just describe their purpose of play and what makes them such a dangerous animal. And again, I got to remind my listeners here, these guys have not lost a home game. They're the only team in the league undefeated at home.
You've said the same word twice now, collective. And that is what it's all about. It's a collective with this team. It's, don't get me wrong, you've got difference makers. Now Gosdog's having an incredible season. You bring Ua in, you bring Carranza in. They are difference makers. But it's more of a collective. So when you talk about the fact of their defensive record, that's not the goalkeeper and the back four. That starts at the front. And with Philadelphia Union, they're so difficult to play against because they are intense and it just doesn't stop. And that starts from the front. You know, so you've got your two centre forwards. They, a lot of the time, will dictate the way the game's going to go, not necessarily just by putting the ball in the back of the net, but also being that first line of press. And it's a system that is, it's difficult to play against because it's, you don't come up against it every week. So therefore, at times, it's difficult to plan because more often than not, you're planning to play against a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3. But where the Union play with the diamond, it's a very, very different system. And the way that Union go about it is, like I say, it's everybody attacks together and everybody defends together. And you can't have a weak link within that system, because if you do, then your press is going to break down. And it's an organized press. Everybody knows what's expected of them. And that's something that Jim Curtin deserves an unbelievable amount of credit, because you've got to bring the right players in. You know, it has to be players that can fit the system, because, you know, if you're looking to bring a player into a team, you know, more often than not, you'll say, okay, well, he'll fit into this system because his team that he's just come from fit that system and play that system. But a lot of the times now when Philadelphia Union are bringing players in, it might be a case of, okay, he plays this position in this system, but when he comes to us, we've got to make sure that he's able to play that. So it actually takes a little bit of extra homework to bring players in. But yeah, they're just a team that, they represent Philadelphia as a city remarkably well. And the city and the team is sort of as one, which I always think is very important.
But I'm going to stop you there, because a little while ago you told me that it's not necessarily imperative that you should be worried about the aesthetics of football. And I know you're talking about the pretty, the beautiful game, playing out of the back when maybe you don't have players you're capable of doing that with. Mm. But dang, if I'm watching Philadelphia and I don't go, as a guy growing up in New Jersey, man, that team represents Philadelphia.
Exactly.
Fighters, you know, if you're in New Jersey, you don't like anything Philadelphia, and vice versa. So for me, the style and purpose of play fits Philly perfectly.
Yes, 100%. And I think that's really important. And I've likened it before to Stoke City, where I was for such a long time. And it's, know your supporters, know your area. And if you can, and you're able to, if you can mirror that, that is something that's really special. And I remember when we were at Stoke and we were in the Premier League, you know, that what would get the crowd going more than anything, it wouldn't be a player taking on three or four players. It might be an individual making a hundred yard sprint to go and get a last ditch tackling. And then all of a sudden, if the fans and the players are at one, then you know everything's okay. So when I was playing at Stoke, and it's very similar to Philadelphia Union, is like, if they see a player is given absolutely everything and goes off the pitch, maybe not have had the greatest of games, that's not a problem, because they want to see.
You know what's stunning to me sometimes? I hear people go, well, we want to be a harder team. We want to be more difficult to beat. And I always thought that was a prerequisite when you were a professional soccer player at a club. I hear this language all the time, and I'm just like, isn't that a prerequisite? I mean, that's a starting point. I mean,
yeah, it should be a starting point, but I don't necessarily think that it is. And one of the things that's a little bit of a bugbear of mine is that obviously when I played, I was a defender, is that we look at attacking as an art. It's an art form, but all of a sudden defending isn't. Now, if you look at the teams that more often than not do well, they're teams that have got the best defenses. And the hardest thing to do in a football match, and it's why they go for the biggest transfer fees, it's probably why they earn the most wages. The hardest thing to do in a football match is score a goal. So therefore, if you work on your defense and have a really strong unit, you don't need to score as many goals. And that's one of the things that I think's been forgotten about a lot of the time. And wherever you look in Europe, wherever you look in world football, more often than not, the teams that actually take note of the defensive side of the games, they're the teams that go and have success, because you don't have to score three goals to win a game. You don't have to score two goals. A lot of the times it might just be one goal that's needed to win a game. And as I go back to what I said previously, the hardest thing to do on a football pitch is to score a goal. So if you're defensively strong, the less goals you've got to score. And I think that that's something that Philadelphia Union pride themselves on. Yes, they've now, you know, they've got goal scorers in the team. Daniel Gosdog's just got into double figures. It was now up and running. Carranza as well. Bedoya's having a great season goals wise. And you've got assist makers like Wagner, who's got one of the best left foots in MLS. Yeah. So, you know, it's something that, yes, it's really important that you have the players that can put the ball in the back of the net, but equally as important is to have a strong defensive structure.
Yeah, and you got it. I mean, I was the amount of blocks and tackles, and I mean, these are categories that the Union's at the top of for sure. I mean, it's just amazing how much they get in front of crosses and blocks, the aerial game, all these things that they take a tremendous amount of pride in. We're talking to Danny Higginbotham. All right, I want to bring in Urs Tanner because he's a big part of this, right? The sporting director, German native, 1860 Munich, Hoffenheim, Red Bull Salzburg, who we've all become in America very in tune with Red Bull because of everything that's happened here, but at Salzburg and Leipzig as well, and with the American player. How important is he? How important is, because you always hear he's kind of a Svengali behind the scenes a little bit. Obviously, he's got immense experience. Mm-hmm. How much does the playing style have to do with what he believes in?
I think that's obviously a huge part. You know, I think when you look at Ernst Tanner, when obviously you look at Jim Curtin as well, I think there's an understanding that they both see the game very similar, which is really important. But then what you also have to do is look at, like I look at Ernst Tanner, and I spoke to him on numerous occasions, intelligent, unbelievable football, the way he's one of these guys that when you speak to him, you know what it's like. If you love football or soccer, obviously, as they call it over here, you want to talk to someone like him for hours, because it's just like you always feel as though you're being, even though I've been in the game for such a long time, you always feel as though you learn something when you speak to him. And then you only have to look at the players that have come into the club that have had great success. You know, not these household names that have had these incredible careers around Europe, but players that come in and you're like, oh, I wonder what this guy's like. And they just turn out to be unbelievable hits. Now, any club is going to have hits and they're going to have misses. But if you look at what Philadelphia Union has done over the years with the players that they've brought in, it's probably been 95 to 98% hits, which is incredible. You know, and, you know, I look at Martinez now, you know, defensive midfielder, in my mind, arguably one, if not the best defensive midfielder in MLS. He wasn't that well known. You got Kai Wagner, you know, coming over as well. He's been here for years now. I think he's the best left back in MLS.
So what happens here, Danny? Is it because of the system that people rise also, the way it's set up, maybe gets the best out of players? Maybe coming from a place where it might have been a little bit more difficult for him, like Martinez in his case. I mean, yeah, he's an unsung hero. He's got the emotional control thing, I think, a little bit better under control. Yeah. But you know, what is that? Because, you know, we see guys that don't succeed other places and all of a sudden they come to the right team, the right fit. And you're shaking your head because you're going, this isn't the same guy I saw.
It comes down to due diligence. It's as simple as that. You know, I go back to when I was playing, we would sign players and all of a sudden there was big hysteria. It's like, wow, he's going to be an incredible signing. And then they come in and it doesn't work out. Now, you'll hear people say, oh, he's not a good player. No, he's just the wrong player for that club, and he just doesn't suit the system. Yeah. And I think with Philadelphia Union, they tick every single box before a player comes in. It's like, you know, the biggest thing is the unity of the squad. You know, you speak to some of the players, you speak to the manager. The dressing room is so important. It's so important in football because if you have a dressing room which is split, you can forget having success on the pitch. So first and foremost, are they good players? You know, secondly, how do they fit the system that the team wants to play? Thirdly, are they going to improve? Are they going to improve the starting 11? And I think that's where a lot of clubs get it wrong. It's like, okay, well, I liken it to when you see clubs doing it. It's like going into a sweet shop and it's like, right, I want one of them. 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 And it's like, okay, well, you get all these sweets and there's all these different tastes and different flavors, but then you've got to bring them all together. And it's very, very difficult to do that. And, you know, at times over the years, you've seen players go for big money that have been exceptional at their previous club. They then come to the new club and have played in a completely different position. You know, I saw Manchester United do it years ago when they signed Di Maria. You know, he'd had an incredible time at Real Madrid, got man of the match in the Champions League final, and then Manchester United bring him in and play him in a completely different position. So I think that's part of it with bringing a player in, is having an idea of where you're going to play him. not bringing a player in and going, oh, well, we hope this works. And I think with Philadelphia Union, they look at it and they say, right, okay, this is a structure of our team. How will this player fit in? What's he like in the dressing room? And it just goes back to doing your due diligence, you know, and it becomes more of a coincidence if you're getting more right than you're getting wrong. You know, there's only so many times you can be lucky. So it's about doing the background check on players and how they're going to settle in. And all of a sudden they're playing in the first team. And it's like, wow, it's as though they've been playing in that first team and in that system for the last 5 years.
Exceptionally interesting, because you got the youth thing going, you're getting a lot of supply from there. It's less of a hit on your salary cap. You're making real moves there. You've got this selective process where you're nailing most of your signings. It is remarkable. I want to take you into Mikkel Uhre, the Danish striker, because I have a good Danish friend who's a sponsor of this show with Danish Inspirations Modern Contemporary Furniture. And he said to me, he goes, okay, Glenn, Uhre's going to come here and score goals. Tell me about him.
I really like him. So I had the pleasure of interviewing him. I'm trying to think now whether it was before his first game or it was just after his first game. I'm not too sure. And he's a pupil of the game. He studies the game, you know. And one of the questions I asked him, he came on away at, let me get this right, I think he came on away at Montreal, maybe that might. Yeah, I think he did. I think that might have been his first appearance. And he came off the bench. And one of the things that I'd noticed was that as the game was evolving, there was space in a specific area. And then he comes on and he's a magnet to this space. And don't get me wrong, he didn't score, but he had a couple of one-on-ones. And I remember saying to him, I asked him and interviewed him and I said, you know, one of the things that I noticed from this game that you played, like I say, away at Montreal, was that when you came onto the pitch, all of a sudden you found yourself like gravitating to this specific area of the pitch. And I said, is that something, did you study that before the game or during the game? He was like, I was watching that from being on the bench. He wants to get educated all the time on football, and he's an observer of games. And now what you see, obviously he'd had, you know, an injury, so he missed a bit of time, and it just took him a little bit of time to get into it. But you're seeing now he's a clever player. You know, he knows now straight away. I always look at that and I say, good players can play with good players and make other players around them better. And you look at the connection in particular that he has with Gazdag and Carranza as well. But he knows that when Gazdag picks the ball up, the form that Gazdag's in at the moment, if Uhre makes this run, he's going to find him. And he makes these runs, and they're not just runs for the sake of it. They're intelligent runs. You look at Uhre and you think, well, you know, he's well over 6'4". He's going to be this physical target man. He's much more than that. He looks to exploit spaces. And obviously he's on a really good run at the moment as in terms of scoring goals. And I think that he's only going to get better as well with time as he's getting, you know, this threesome, so to speak, of the tip of the diamond with Gazdag, Carranza and Uhre, they've not played that much time together. But each time they play together, you can see there's a better understanding between the three of them. And that's only going to grow and grow and grow. And I think in Uhre as well, you're going to have a player that's going to keep scoring goals. And I think his confidence is just going to keep going higher and higher. And because of his intelligence, he finds himself in some really good goal scoring opportunities. And now you've got players that are giving him the assists as well. So another one, which I think is going to be an outstanding signing.
All right. We got 1 minute, Danny. Gazdag, I want to take you back to him, because you're not a team that really is a big tempo, a big build-up type of team. What type of playmaker is he? And do you even call him a playmaker?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. He is a playmaker, but his work rate, his work ethic is second to none. He's a top goal scorer. He's now got 10 goals. I think it took a little bit of time for him to adjust. You know, he came over and he hadn't really had a break from football at all. He came in and then it took a little bit of time for him to adjust to the league. Had a great preseason, a full preseason. And now he just looks like a player that just oozes confidence. And one of the things is that he now sees things probably 2 or 3 seconds earlier than what he was doing last season. But that's just him adjusting. That's him getting to know his surroundings, his teammates, the system. And he's been absolutely magnificent this season. If he's not scoring, he's assisting. And he is the go-to man at times. And more often than not, when he picks the ball up, you know that something's going to happen. And I think with Uhre and Carranza, between the three of them, they always manage to create space for each other. So it's something that's really growing, and he is the spotlight at the moment because of how well he's done. And every time he gets on the pitch, you can see that he knows he's probably going to assist or he's going to score a goal. He's in a really good place at the moment, which is great to see.
Danny, so much thanks for coming on here. Great insight for all my listeners here ahead of this game against the Houston Dynamo this weekend. You have a great call of the game. Thank you very much for coming on, and we'll see what happens in Philadelphia. It's not going to be an easy place to go. They remain undefeated. He's Danny Higginbotham, former Premier League and championship player, also the color analyst on Philadelphia Union Broadcast. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Okay, that does it tonight for Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. A reminder about our great presenting sponsor, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, are committed to working for you 24/7. You get in a car, boat, motorcycle, maritime accident. It's a nervous time. Nobody likes it. Few things get worse than severe injury to family members. That's when you call the Daspit Law Firm at 713-322-HURT. 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. DaspitLaw.com, on your side, bringing you soccer talk each and every week in Houston and Austin. 713-322-HURT, DaspitLaw.com. All right, don't forget, hit me up on Twitter and Instagram, at Glenn Davis Soc, at Soccer Matters GD. Get over to Facebook, Soccer Matters, and also hit us up at GlennDavisSoccer.com. All these little clicks and likes, all this stuff helps to keep us on the air, helps to keep people happy and engaged, because we're always trying to increase our listener base. And we want you to call in with your opinion, because you, the Houston area, and those of you on the internet highway listening all the way over to Europe and internationally and across America, you have strong soccer opinions. You know the game. We want them at 713-780-3776. That'll do it tonight. Podcast at ESPN975.com. I'm Glenn Davis. Until next Tuesday night, remember, soccer matters.
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 98.7.
Wait, what?
I said 98.7. That's my show.
Let's try this one more time, okay?
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 97.5 FM.